This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today for Local Talk, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan, on this cold day. This is the second Wednesday of January, and time for our monthly Story County Report with Leanne Harder, who can't be with us today. But we have Linda Merkin, who is the chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and she'll be delivering Leanne's report today. And we hope we'll have time to tell us about what the Board of Supervisors and what's going on in the county. So, Linda, welcome to our show today.
Thank you, Paul. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, you have free rein to give us the latest, so here you go.
Okay, thank you. As Paul said, I'm currently the chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors. I've been on the board for about a year now, so I have learned a lot in the past year. One of the things I have learned is that the County Board of Supervisors has a wide, wide variety of duties. Some of those are statutory in terms of approving a budget, approving county ordinances. We also are the overall management of the county, working with elected officials, other elected officials, and work with department heads and providing services to the county. So what I'm going to do is just tell you a little bit right now some of the things that have happened at Story County that might be of interest to you and impact you, and also some of the things that we've got on the drawing board for the next couple weeks and months.
Sounds inviting. Go ahead.
Go ahead? Okay. First of all, we are starting into our budget process for fiscal year 21, excuse me, which starts this July 1, 2020. So the next week and a half, we'll be having what we call budget work sessions with all our department heads and looking at what they're looking at for the upcoming year. We had some requests for some additional staff, but pretty much it's status quo, continuing the good services that they're doing for the county right now. That will culminate with the public hearings and a final, in March, final approval and adoption of the budget for fiscal 21. We have some other things going on, some changes in the county right now. As I think people might have noticed, our county attorney, Jessica Reynolds, has resigned effective February 4th. She will be taking a job, February 7th. She will be taking a job with the Iowa Attorney General as a prosecuting attorney's training coordinator for the state of Iowa, for the entire state. So that's a great honor for her. We're very happy for her. We're sorry to see her leave. Jessica has been with the county attorney's office for quite some time. When Steve Holmes resigned in the middle of his term in 2016, the current board then appointed her to serve the remainder of the term. And then she was elected on her own in 2018. Her term currently expires then in 2022. The board has two options. One is to appoint somebody for to serve until the next general election, which is this November. If you're appointed to a vacancy, you only serve until the next general election. Or the other option would be to have a special election. Special elections are pretty pricey. The very, like, minimum estimate we have from the auditor's office is $30,000, and probably it would be more. So looking at the whole process and looking at that, we decided that we would proceed by appointment. So we would be appointing somebody just to serve until the general election. And if somebody is elected, then they take office right away or the next week. They don't wait until January because it's a vacancy. So what we are doing is basically this Tuesday. Was that only yesterday?
Time flies when you're having
fun. Oh, my gosh. Yesterday was a very long day. Yesterday, we approved a process to appoint a county attorney. We will be accepting applications from January 8th through January 24th, and then the board will review applications. And on February 4th at 6 p.m., we are going to have presentations by the finalists. And we plan to and hope to be able to appoint somebody on the 7th at 1 p.m. Jessica's his resignation is effective at noon, so we're planning to appoint somebody then so we don't have to do an acting appointment. So it looks like we'll be able to do that. That's our goal. We'll have information on our website, storycountyiowa.gov, for anybody who needs wishes to apply for this. You do need to be an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Iowa and also need to be a registered voter in Story County. So that's the county attorney's vacancy. We are looking forward to the process. We have a good process set up to collect applications and to evaluate them and to have public presentations. So that will be one thing definitely on our agenda for the next few weeks. There's also a couple things I'd like to tell you that are coming up. The Environmental Health Department has some proposed changes to the county septic ordinance, which the Board of Health will be discussing on February 4th at their meeting in the administrative building in Nevada at 2 p.m. It would require cleanouts of septic systems that not, currently there's not a requirement. It would be a five-year requirement out in the county. Anybody has a septic system. Also, in terms of establishing a new septic system, it would require an engineer, an engineering firm to come out and design that. Formerly, our environmental health officer has done that, but that's gotten to be too much of a job, and so they're proposing a change there. A couple things that we have done recently that might be of interest. One, we had received a lot of feedback from residents asking us to pass something called the Construction Evaluation Resolution. And that's regarding the master matrix, which governs how CAFOs are established. 89 of Iowa's 99 counties, including Story, have in the past adopted annually a Construction Evaluation Resolution. And we did so this year. And what that means, basically, is if somebody wants to establish a concentrated animal feeding operation in Iowa, they need to apply to the Department of Natural Resources. It used to be that the counties were able to govern CAFO applications and locations via our local zoning ordinances, but the legislature changed that over 10 years ago, I think in 2004. But if our county adopts something called a Construction Evaluation Resolution, that gives us some input into that. Basically, the master matrix scoring that the proposed CAFO will have to go through, we are allowed to review. If the Department of Natural Resources decides they are going to do an on-site inspection, we're allowed to send county staff out to that on-site inspection as well. And if we do not agree with the final decision of the DNR, we are able to appeal to them and have standing for an appeal of a decision. So even though we don't have the final authority over the establishment of CAFOs, that gives us first a heads up that somebody is planning to establish a CAFO in Story County. It gives us an ability to score that master matrix, tell the DNR what we think about it and make a recommendation. And if we don't like what they did, we get to appeal. So it's a good thing. So we have, not this week, but last week we approved the Construction Evaluation Resolution. So if anybody out there is still getting any emails from ICCI or any other group saying, has your county approved it? I've already told ICCI, yes, we have. You can tell people in Story County. They don't need to contact us, but we always like to talk to you about this if you have thoughts. But, no, we have done that. There's two other resolutions we've done recently. One of them is a resolution. Some of you might have been following with the Iowa Utilities Board the request by Dakota Access Pipeline, which was to double the capacity of the pipeline that runs through 18 counties in Iowa, hazardous liquid petroleum pipeline. And it's from 565,000 barrels a day to 1.1 million barrels a day. A particular concern to residents in Story County is that we have the only pumping station in Iowa. And I'm not an engineer, so I can't really explain to you exactly how that works, but that's where the pressure goes, keeps the oil flowing through. A lot of people feel that that gives us, you know, maybe some extra concern about pipeline leaking, breaks, those kind of things. The Dakota Access Pipeline folks are required by IUB rules to have a public hearing on a major change in the operation of the pipeline, they have asked for a waiver of that rule and for the IUB to just act without a public hearing. Many objections have been filed. Yesterday, Story County passed a resolution urging the Iowa Utilities Board not to waive that public hearing because we feel that the residents of Iowa, and particularly of Story County, need to have the opportunity to address their Public Utilities Board on this issue. If you want to follow the objections that are being filed, you can go to the Iowa Utilities Board website and sign up. And I believe, let's see, HLP-2014-001 is the number. HLP, Hazardous Liquid Pipeline, -2014, the year that they requested the permit, and then -0001, in other words, the first permit requested that year. So 2014-0001. You can sign up. You will see all the objections that are filed. You should see if there's a notice of the hearing. Okay. The other thing we did yesterday is we made a recommendation, adopted a recommendation on the renaming, the proposed renaming of Squaw Creek. As I think several of the listeners know, squaw is a derogatory term, has been widely accepted as a derogatory term for Native American women. I can't say what it means on the, I can't say what it means on the radio, but I'll tell you what, you can Google it and you can find out. Wikipedia has a lot of information on it. And what we found is the U.S. Board of Geographic Names contacted us because when they have a request, and they received one from somebody in Ames to rename Squaw Creek, when they have such a request, they check with all the local government entities for what their thoughts are on it. So we, as well as the city of Ames and three other counties through which Squaw Creek flows, were contacted about this. We contacted a lot of people ourselves. A lot of folks call us, email us, write us. We also were able to get a list of something called THPOs, Tribal Historic Preservation Officers. State Archaeologist's Office keeps that. State Archaeologist's Office said to me, well, we are for renaming that creek. We sent out, I think, 60 emails to the Tribal Historic Preservation Officers, probably received about 20 back, also received lots of input from Story County residents. There were some people who weren't in favor of it, didn't understand the reasons, said it's always been Squaw Creek. That's important to me. I think, though, the majority of people said, I think it's time for a change on this. The person who requested the change had suggested Story Creek. We didn't find a lot of interest in that. For one thing, I don't think Judge Story, even though he had a great career as a jurist, did not live in Story County. Secondly, we have already honored him. I think there were other names that came up. There were reasons they weren't usable. One is that you can't be a living person or you have to be deceased for 5 years. Somebody had said, how about former Chief Justice Mark Cady, who died recently? And we said, yeah, he's certainly somebody who needs to be honored some way, but his death was just this year.
Linda, I have an idea. I like to call it Mauna Kea Creek.
What is that?
I don't know, but it sounds Native American.
Well, here's where we came out finally. We looked at some words that were in Native American languages for woman, and we looked at some other names, place names. What we finally came up with is the majority of people said honor Native Americans somehow. We agreed with that. We came up with two suggestions. The first one was Iowaway, Iowaway, and the reason is the first tribe, those past prehistoric people who lived here in this central Iowa area, was the Iowaway. There's also a suggestion of Sauk because the Sauk Indians lived here, Sauk. We had a slight preference for Iowa. So what we did is we gave those two and said our preference is Iowa. Sauk has also a strong contender. And that's what we sent to the Board of Geographic Names. So that's the recommendation from Story County. I don't know that there's any final recommendations from any of the other
Well, Linda, who makes the final choice on this?
The U.S. Board of Geographic Names.
Okay.
And it will take several months, right. I would imagine.
Oh, by the way, everybody, if you just tuned in, we're talking this morning with Linda Merkin, who is the chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and she is bringing us up to date on all the current happenings. And continue, Linda. This is, you've got me fascinated here.
How much time do we have left, Paul?
Well, we have enough time for you to elaborate as much as you want. And
okay.
I really, you know, I'm taking from your comments here that there's always a tension between local jurisdiction and will and state, particularly with the CAFO, as you know, and issues like that. And, of course, everyone wants some local input, and your Board of Supervisors is the organ that functions locally that's going to advocate for local control anytime it's possible to do so, I assume.
We are strong advocates for local control, and one of the things that saddened me in the last couple years is that the Iowa legislature has really tied our hands as localities in some areas, and there are things that I think are really – some of them are really important. A lot of them is environmental concerns. Do you know we could not – we cannot do a ban on single-use plastics locally?
Is that right?
That is correct. The legislature will not allow that. That came with a bill a few years ago that also prohibited counties from setting a minimum wage above the state minimum wage. And so I think that was the biggest thing that was seen then with the what they called the local preemption legislation, because several counties had established minimum wages higher than the state, and the legislature basically said you can't do that. But another thing was Dubuque, I think it was banning single-use plastics, and was in the process of doing that, and that overturned that as well. I mean, several countries are banning them. We know that there's huge problems with plastics in the ocean and breaking down and becoming microplastics. And, you know, the environmental problems that, you know, and it kind of bothers me when the state legislature says not to do something and then says, oh, and you local people, you cannot do that either. Because there are a lot of people who say, we need to look at a lot of climate change issues. We need to look at a lot of environmental issues that we're simply not able to. But we need to work together with the state and figure that out. Is, you know, we need to advocate. And that's one thing I really think the county supervisors can do. When we don't have the authority, we can advocate with other levels of government.
That's true. And I think that, you know, if you're a lobbyist for a particular industry, you want to lobby the largest group possible with the widest jurisdiction possible. That way, whatever they decide and whatever they legislate affects everybody without having to go out and lobby every county.
That's
so
right.
So you see, that's the advantage the lobbyist has to get statewide policy made so that it's statewide. And the legislature can legislate in ways that limit input or change by local boards of supervisors. So that's the smart way to go for a lobbyist. Now, how do we advocate for local control? Well, that means that people obviously have to talk to their legislator about these issues, you know, because they need to empower entities like the local board of supervisors to have more jurisdiction, particularly with things that are
That's true. That's true. And I do say if you have questions about what county authority is and state authority, you know, contact any of the supervisors. We'd be glad to explain what's within our jurisdiction, what issues we're also concerned about that maybe we need to talk together with the state or with the federal government about. I have one more announcement if I can get it in just real quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing that the supervisors did a few weeks ago is we changed some of our hours of operations. Our three biggest buildings, which are the Human Services Center here in Ames, our Administration Building in Nevada, and our Justice Center in Nevada, had varying closing hours. Some were 4:30, some were 5 o'clock. What we found out is most of our offices, you know, actually interact with state offices that are closed at 4:30. So if people came in between 4:30 and 5 o'clock, we often weren't able to help them. So we standardized our hours at our three largest buildings from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The treasurer has said, asked me to announce that if you do want to do a title transfer, they appreciate it if you get there by 4:15 so they can get that all taken care of. We do have different hours at some smaller areas. Secondary engineers and secondary roads is a 7:30 to 4 o'clock. They get started earlier because they're clearing the roads for us. They actually can get started at 2 a.m., but conservation is 8:30 to 4:30 out at McFarland Park. The animal shelter has varying hours because of their needs to be open to the public certain times, and at times they just need to be cleaning, taking care of the animals. So for the animal shelter, I suggest going to our website. Yeah.
But the important thing is administrative offices have a set and standard set
they
of
do.
Hours.
The vast majority of our administrative offices.
Linda, we've run out of time. I'm sorry. We could go on and on and on. And all the things you've said are provocative in terms of what people should be thinking about, advocating for, and actually being involved with. So I'm glad you shared the websites and some of the information you had today. And good luck, and continue to do the fine work you do.
Well, thank you very much. And we so much appreciate KHOI helping us communicate with our constituents. So thank you for this opportunity.
Like the local newspaper, we're how you find out about local things. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 Ames, Story City, and surrounding area. I'm Paul Wearson, one of our hosts today, with co-host Susan Franson, and we've been talking with Linda Merkin. She's chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors with a great report on some of the things coming up in Story County, especially the issues facing our Board of Supervisors.
Our next guest will be Melissa Jewell, Regional Director of Iowa Child Care Resource and Referral. With recent newspaper articles about deaths in childcare facilities, as well as stories about the lack of available childcare in many small communities throughout Iowa, we thought it would be a good idea to educate parents about how they can find safe, quality childcare for their infants and children. For that, we have certainly one of the most knowledgeable people in Iowa. Thanks for speaking with us today, Melissa.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, Melissa, this is Paul. I'm co-hosting here. Looking at your website, I see you have lots of online resources, but that only indicates to me how complex the task of helping parents find good child care has become. Boy, you know, this is a big issue. How do you begin with someone calling for advice?
We actually recommend that they start looking early for child care because there is a lack of child care across the whole state of Iowa. And we really encourage them to do their research. We do have child care resource and referral staff on hand when they call in so we can help answer their questions. If they have about 15 minutes, we'll go through a small little survey with them, trying to get really all of the things that their family needs in the child care providers, like how many children do they need to have care for, what are the hours and the dates, things like do the children have any special needs. And then we compare that with our database, and we try to find a list of child care providers that have openings for the ages of the children that they need and try to give that list to the child care provider, to the families. And then we encourage them to go through an interview process with the people on the list to try to find the best care for their family.
Oh, so you're, in a way, you're a clearinghouse to put them in touch with caregivers. And
yep.
You also have the ability to give them information on affordability or all that sort of thing also, I assume, right?
Yep, yes. So we keep data on for all 99 counties across the whole state of Iowa, and we can give them the average cost of care by the type of care, whether they're in a center or a non-registered home or a registered home, and we can give them ideas of what care generally costs in that area and a lot of different resources in the area.
Well, now, Melissa, you're the regional director for Iowa Child Care Resources and Referral, and tell me about your organization. How long have you been involved with this?
We've been, as a statewide agency, about 28 years now. Informally, we've actually been in place longer. We are federally funded, so all of our services are free to the family. And we actually have three different components that we work with. We definitely work with the families. We want them to find safe, healthy child care locations for their children. We also work with the child care providers themselves. So we want to make sure, one, they're meeting minimum requirements according to DHS rules. And then we also want to encourage them to go above and beyond and to have even more higher quality standards and to offer them. And then the third piece, that we're willing to work with communities. So right now we're spending a lot of time with communities across Iowa that are looking for more child care solutions since there are not as many. So we'll work with cities or we'll work with different local groups trying to find and increase the availability of child care.
Well, there are a lot of issues around child care that get a lot of publicity, and they're talking points for a lot of programs I've heard, and particularly on public radio and television. And I know that there are a lot of real issues here. One thing is the low pay for child care workers, the issues about training, how competent are they going to be, profit versus nonprofit. Now, you can guide people through finding organizations that meet the requirements that you have. You're not going to request or refer somebody to an organization that you don't feel has been vetted. Is that right?
Actually, it is legal. Since it's legal to do child care in Iowa and not be registered with the Department of Human Services, we do give those names out as referrals also if that child care business wants to work with us. So that's one of the things that we try to educate families about is don't assume that all people who are accepting child care have been registered with the Department of Human Services, get annual inspections, and have the background checks done. So that's an important question families need to ask, because if you are going to a non-registered home provider, they may not have had any background checks done.
So you're letting people know the environment they're operating in. You know,
yes.
It's not necessarily true that they're registered or properly vetted. You're just giving them that name or reference, and mm-hmm. and giving them the caveat that you need to check this out, or here's what we know about it. That's good, because there's a certain amount of screening going on there. And a lot of people who are seeking child care need to be educated about a lot of things. And I think you're a clearinghouse for that information. That's an excellent service, I think.
Yeah.
Now, let's say that I'm a parent newly moved into a small town. We'll just pick out Colo, Iowa. How does that sound, Colo? How would you help me?
I would recommend that you call our 800 number and work one-on-one with a parent referral specialist. And, again, she will go through and talk about with you for about 15 minutes trying to get all the dynamics for your family, how many children, the days you need care, if you want a home or a center, if you want a home, are you willing to have pets? They have a very interesting list of questions that they go through to try to find the right ones. Then they will prepare a list of providers. At the top of the list will be the ones that are registered and who are participating in the Iowa Quality Rating System, which is another way to gauge the quality of care that a provider is giving. Then they will go through and ask you questions like, do you want to have any information about how you should interview for a child care? Or what are, if you do an interview, what are some of the questions that you should be looking for? What are some red flags? All of those questions our parent referral specialist can walk a family member through. Then we also say at the end of the referral then to say that if you go through the list, you cannot find a child care provider that meets your needs, call us back. We'll try to work with another list. We've also, let's say you call and you have somebody who has a special needs, maybe a child with a feeding tube. That's a pretty special need. We also can work with our local child care consultants with the child care programs, trying to find a program that might be willing to take a child with a feeding tube or might have some of those special needs. So because we work with both the child care providers and the families, it's easier for us to try to find a solution for each of the families.
That's an excellent service. Now, I hear there are child care deserts.
Yes, most of Iowa, except for around the Polk County area, has desert areas in it.
And so basically you're talking about you know, if you're in a small town or a rather remote area, it might be more challenging to find child care.
Definitely, especially if you don't have a lot of centers around. So one of the things that we also ask families is how far are you willing to travel to find child care? And what we're finding, too, is a lot of times families are not looking for child care in the towns that they're living in because they know that town might not have child care, but then they're searching for what are child care options in a larger town that they might be traveling to work from.
Yeah, that's very important, because they might want child care where they can drop them off to work in a more populous area where they actually have their job, and that's something you'd have to look at, too. What an excellent resource for people to call and screen and make decisions about child care. Now, there's probably a lot of variety in child care. A lot of issues are surrounding age, probably. Are there some child care centers who don't take infants, for instance?
Yes, definitely. Each of the individual child care businesses really get to decide what the age group that they want to care for. And if you're looking at a center, the ratio for the number of staff to an infant is one staff to four infants. So it's really expensive for centers to care for infants versus school-age kids, where you can have a lot more school-age kids to one staff member. So the infant slots can be really challenging to find those, because they fill up very quickly.
So people need to be aggressive in finding child care.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that some places even have a waiting list. Is that right?
Yes. We have centers that have waiting lists that can have 50 children plus on their waiting list to get in.
Now, how much staff do you have available to work in your age? Do you have full-time people, right?
Yes. So the state of Iowa is actually divided into 5 different child care resource and referral regions. And so depending on what part of the state you're at, you might be working with a different child care resource and referral region. But we all offer the same regions. Statewide, I'm guessing we have about 80 to 90 staff total altogether.
Mm-hmm. Where are you officed?
Our actual office, I'm out of Remsen, Iowa, way in the far part of northwest Iowa, but our region covers 23 counties, so we cover all the way down to Hamilton, Humboldt, Wright, all of those counties, too.
Boy, it's very informative. I didn't know a thing about this today. So you've really helped me. Now, I'm beyond child care, but tell us again how people can get in touch with your organization, and is there a website, phone number? Just everyone at home, get your pencils ready if you're looking for child care. Go ahead.
Our website is iowacrr.org, and the direct line to call for parent referrals, and it's all 99 counties call the same number, is 855-244-5301.
Oh, it's good for everyone to know that. And you certainly have been good to teach me new things today, Melissa.
Well, I'm glad.
Yes. You know, when you get up in the morning, you hope you'll learn something that makes you different than when you got up. And so you've fulfilled that for me today. And what a wonderful resource it is for people looking for child care. And I really like the coverage you have in the state. And all the areas that you serve, it's just fantastic. And I think that, child care is a real issue. I know that. And I know that there are a lot of issues around child care that we could talk about for a long time. You know, licensing requirements. A lot of people who are working with child care have very low pay, don't they, Melissa?
Yes. Yes, they do. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to find child care, because Iowa has such a low unemployment rate right now. A lot of the people that would maybe traditionally consider going into early child care have decided to go take other jobs where they're making a higher wage and getting benefits. Because not only does child care they have low wages, very few places actually have benefits for their workers, too. So that's another problem.
Yeah, you know, this is something that I'm aware of, too, because there's a lot of issues around home care for senior citizens, you know, people who go out to work with people in their homes to allow them to remain at home with all their health issues currently. And that's another area where I've heard that there's low pay versus the great responsibility. So these are all issues that I'm sure that you're an advocate to work for. Anytime you have the opportunity to lobby or inform people who make decisions, like legislative bodies and things like that. Well, Melissa Jewell, it's been a pleasure to have you on. You've certainly been informative to me. She's the Regional Director of Iowa Child Care and Resource Referral, where you can find out where to go and what to do and how to evaluate child care possibilities for your children. Melissa, thank you very much. And I think we're going to have a little music about children right now, aren't we, Susan?
Well, yes. It's a classic.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes or taking a ride to cyberspace, switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play? Where do you roll on roads over fresh green grass for your lorry loads pumping petrol gas? And you make them long and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. No, we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play?
Is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been talking with Melissa Jewell, Regional Director of Iowa Child Care Resource and Referral, about how to cope with the difficulties of finding safe, quality child care throughout Iowa. We'll be ending our show with an announcement of a town hall on Medicare for All this Saturday in Des Moines. We have one of the organizers, Matthew Covington, from the staff of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, on the phone with us now. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. How are you doing this morning?
Well, hi, Matthew. I'm Paul. I'm co-host with Susan. Glad to have you on. Tell us about this meeting coming up. This is going to be in Des Moines, January 11th, Saturday. Tell us about it. What's happening?
Yeah, no, thank you. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal from the state of Washington and Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin are going to be in Iowa this Saturday. They are the two co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and they are going to be in town talking about Medicare for All, sponsored by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, as well as an organization called Business for Medicare for All.
Well, this is a very current issue with all of the Democratic candidates for the nomination for president. It gets a lot of airtime and a lot of debate issue. What do you think will be happening on Saturday? You expect a big turnout?
Yeah, no, definitely. Hope so, because it's an opportunity for folks to come hear more about this bill in particular, the Medicare for All Act of 2019, also for folks in, you know, following the bill numbers and everything, it's H.R. 1384. But, no, it's a chance to come learn more about that particular bill, hear from everyday Iowans and small business owners on their concerns regarding health care and how Medicare for All could address many of those, as well as ample time for Q&A from the audience. So it is really, truly, we've been doing this as a Medicare for All town hall and want to stick true to that town hall format with ample time for interaction from the public.
And it's going to be Saturday, this Saturday, January 11th, 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m., and this is at the Grace United Methodist Church, 3700 Cottage Grove in Des Moines.
Yep, you are correct. Yep, right in kind of the northwest side of Des Moines. There will be ample parking. Hopefully the weather will be good to us as well.
Yeah, this is right west of the Drake University area, for those of you who know Des Moines generally. This will be held in the Activity Center in the basement. And, well, just generally speaking, since this is such a hot topic right now in the campaigns, what are the obstacles to establishing Medicare for All, Matthew? What's the typical give and take on this issue?
Yeah, no, well, thank you for asking that. And I'm also myself looking forward to hear what both Congresswoman and Congressman have to say, as well as those in the audience. And we do hear a lot of concerns. I would say some certainly valid, but then I think also some fear mongering around this issue. Sometimes I say it, you know, it's parading around as, well, these are just some of the practical obstacles of getting this passed, or to, you know, implementing such a system that's going to be so shocking. And I would say that the obstacle is corporate greed, and it is the for-profit private insurance industry that makes hundreds of millions and billions of dollars profiting off of our health and sickness. That is what is standing in the way. Today's healthcare system, our system, if we want to call it that, fails to provide quality therapeutic healthcare as a right to all people living in the U.S. I mean, why would nearly 30 million of us still be uninsured, and at least 40 million more can't afford the cost of their copays and deductibles? So something has to be done, and when you deny those people that access, someone is profiting off of that. But I'd say that I would encourage folks to come on Saturday and hear from others and hear from each other what our concerns are and what we see as paths forward, and ask the two original co-sponsors of H.R. 1384 how they would answer that question.
Excuse me, Matthew. In your publicity, you mentioned another name, health insurance whistleblower Wendell Potter.
Yeah. So we are also expected to have Wendell Potter, who spent years working for Cigna, and for those of you who have been following him, he's had a sort of a crisis of conscience in the late 2000s, and basically came out against the for-profit health insurance system, talking about the messaging that they use, how they latch on to key phrases and stoke fears around, well, single payer will restrict your choice, when, as he in fact shows, that the current system we have with networks, deductibles, co-pays, which doctors are in, which hospitals are in, which providers, that actually it is our current system that restricts choice, but that the for-profit insurance industry uses those catchphrases as a way to steer us clear of the solution we need. So he, since sort of having his crisis of conscience, he has become a health care reform advocate. He's currently resides in Pennsylvania, but not that often, because he's out touring the country speaking on this issue. And he is currently the president of Business for Medicare for All. That is a new national campaign that is educating the business community around the benefits of Medicare for All.
Well, of course, this is an organization, generally the healthcare industry, health insurance companies, private health insurance companies, who have a great deal of clout in terms of lobbying and financing campaigns for those folks who are running for Congress or the Senate. That's a big obstacle. And one thing that people have to put in context is that in most developed countries, there is national health insurance. You know, and we're the only country that really has based insurance coverage for health on employment. That's the tie-in that originally created this conglomerate of health insurance companies, because just look at our system here. If you're not a part of an employer-sponsored health care program or insurance coverage, you have to be in COBRA or you're in Obamacare or in some independent way of being insured, which might be expensive and very complex. And one of the biggest problems is the, as you pointed out, the complexity and variety in this healthcare industry in terms of networks. I've read articles about surprise medical bills where somebody thought they were covered, and then they found out that the anesthetist in their surgery was out of network, and they got a bill for $20,000. And that's an issue too, isn't it?
These stories are all too common, which it should not have to be that way. No, you're exactly right. I mean, just over the weekend I was reading that my personal belief that our state's failed Medicaid privatization, read in the newspaper that we're withholding $44 million of our money from our newest managed care organization because they have failed to make over 100,000 of payments that they were supposed to make to providers in our communities, large and small, that are working. This has ripple effects to our daily lives in our communities and our economic activity. So it's not just the care that we need to receive or that we're not receiving, but then when the for-profit insurance companies and others come in, how does that have ripple effects throughout our local economies as well, such that then we have to wake up to see news articles about, a measly, the carrot and stick of, we're going to withhold this. So it's very frustrating and very complex, yes.
Well, you know, it's a system that really needs, at the very basic, reform and the opportunity for people to have coverage universally. And I really think that the time might be coming when this is a much more amenable idea than it used to be and deserves a lot more attention. And your meeting on Saturday is designed to make sure more people know or have the opportunity to ask questions and be informed on this issue. So for those of you who have a lot of concerns about this, once again, it'll be Saturday, this coming Saturday, January 11th at 9:30 to 11 a.m., Grace United Methodist Church, 3700 Cottage Grove in Des Moines. And this is an opportunity for you to talk to people who are actually active in advocating for legislation to deal with some of these problems. Now, frankly, Matt, one of the biggest things that people mention in opposition to general health care available insurance in our country would be the cost. How do you deal with that question? Oh, this is expensive. It's going to break us.
Yeah, no, and again, I also am excited for this Saturday to hear from the person that actually wrote the bill and the other original co-sponsor. I would say we can't afford not to. There's been a lot of studies and research that says that if you add up the co-pays, deductibles, the premiums paid by either the individual or the employer, current Medicaid payments, current Medicare costs, we are already paying more than what Medicare for All would cost. I would say that we can't afford not to. We have done this before when we have mobilized. I wasn't alive back then, but I'm sure that there were similar arguments around the creation of Social Security. Perhaps even when we passed our traditional Medicare back in the mid-60s, I'd say we can't afford not to. It's a matter of political will, not affordability.
That sounds like a good ending line. That's well said. And I really appreciate Matthew Covington. He's from the staff of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement and talking about a meeting coming up on Saturday. Grace United Methodist Church, 3700 Cottage Grove in Des Moines. It's in the Activity Center in the basement, 9:30 to 11. And thank you very much, Matthew, for educating us and letting us know of this opportunity to talk about something that we hear in the political campaigns and something where people need to be aware of what the issues are and what's going on for people who are advocating for legislation to fix this problem. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Thank you all very much.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Linda Merkin, Melissa Jewell, and Matthew Covington.
Now you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Where Will the Children Play by Cat Stevens from the CD Tea for the Tillerman, and Crosby Farm by Brian Keenan from the CD Hidden Falls. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.